You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's a big Monday here on NFL Live. The majority of NFL teams are now into padded practices, and we've got you covered all around. As practices ramp up, we now see Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Tua Tagovailoa, and more sporting uniforms. Plus, we've got you covered from the inside. We'll take you into training camps as our reporters give you the latest from day one of real physical football. All that and some big news out of Cowboys camp that we'll get to in just a few minutes. But hello and welcome into NFL Live. Along with Tim Hasselbeck and Mike Tannenbaum and Dan Graziano, I am Field Yates. The Buccaneers have opened up their padded practices, and we can now see Tom Brady in action with his new teammates. Here's head coach Bruce Arians on how his quarterback in his creamsicle uniform is handling the pressure of a new system.
Everything I expected. You know, he's still learning some guys. He was a little bit hesitant on a throw with a young receiver today that they got their hands on. But he's thrown to the right guy all the time. And, I mean, 7-on-7 is what it's supposed to look like, completion after completion. And, you know, in the blitz drills, he's seeing how we call it, how we protect it. Doing a real good job with his hots and sights. So, yeah, he's right where he needs to be. I'm not worried about him.
My question is about Gronk. And in your experience, after a year being away from football, how long will it take in order for him to get into football shape?
Well, he's probably in New England shape right now, but he's not in Florida shape. Humidity and heat's kicking his ass pretty good. And that's different, man. When you train in New England and come down here, it's really different. We laughed about it out there today. I don't think he's ever sweat that much in his life. So, it takes a little time to get into the Florida shape. But as far as playing a game, he's more than ready right now.
All right, Tim. So those of us from Massachusetts may not be known for our high school football pedigree, but you are an exception. You, of course, one of the standout high school players before your NFL career. And so I could ask you this question. It's real. You know the climate. How much of a factor is adjusting to the heat for a quarterback like Tom Brady is?
I do think there's an adjustment, especially if you're particular about how, you know, the footballs, feel, which he is. And that's not a Deflategate reference. It's just the fact, if you talk to any center that he's played with, the fact that he cares about it. He's got an instruction for how the centers have to wear their towel. He, like most quarterbacks, you know, concerned about how much a center is sweating and how wet the ball is when you receive it from the center. And so there is an adjustment to that. It sounds, you know, kind of silly, but it's true, especially if you, if you're a guy that in that heat is sweating like crazy, keeping your hands dry. And you know, I know some of the video that we've shown of Brady, you know, he basically has a bath towel tucked into his, you know, his practice pants. And then you look at the other quarterbacks and they're kind of doing a similar thing as well. So I just remember my brother going from the Seattle Seahawks, and then he signed with the Tennessee Titans in the lockout year. He goes to training camp and calling me and saying, look, I haven't thrown a dry ball yet all throughout training camp. And he wasn't used to it. And I was coming from Seattle where it rains all the time. So it is an adjustment. I'm sure he'll be fine, but it is different. It is different. I live in this climate, and it definitely takes some getting used to.
Well, Mike Tannenbaum, speaking of taking some getting used to, Gronk is now playing in Florida. He also is coming off of a year off, of course, was out of football last season. How concerned are you about his conditioning after not playing last year?
Yeah, I would be very concerned for a couple of reasons. One, as Coach Arians alluded to, the climate, being with the Dolphins for a number of years. When you put the pads on, soft tissue injuries go up. You just can't get used to the heat and humidity in South Florida in August. So you're going to have soft tissue injuries. He lost a lot of weight, and he missed the game for a year. So Rob Gronkowski is a great player, arguably a Hall of Famer. But he hasn't played in 16 games since 2011. So if I was Tampa Bay, I would ramp him up very gradually. Use him 20 to 30 plays a game, third down red zone, so maybe the most important plays in the game. But if we want to get him through 16 games, they have to be really smart this time of year.
Dan, all eyes are going to be on Tom Brady. That's just going to be a fact of the greatest quarterback of all time, changing teams after nearly two decades with one squad. But what are you watching besides Tom Brady in Tampa Bay right now?
Yeah, I was going to go with the gross, sweaty center quarterback angle, but Tim had that covered. So I'm going to say how they put the group together around Brady, particularly the running game, right? I mean, I know from, you know, having dealt with Bruce Arians and his offenses in the past, the running back that can protect the quarterback the best is the one that's going to play. So they have to figure that out. They brought in LeSean McCoy. They still have Ronald Jones. They drafted Keyshawn Vaughn. So they have to put that group together around him in 4 weeks. And obviously Brady has to get his timing down with his receivers that he doesn't know, a.k.a. Other than Gronk. So there's some stuff to figure out, but I think it'll be interesting to see how they put the offense together around him and how it all works together with so little time to prepare.
Well, certainly Tampa has been, or is as relevant as they've been since their Super Bowl winning season close to two decades ago. From Tom Brady's new team to his old team, the Patriots also opened up padded practices today. And here's what head coach Bill Belichick had to say this morning on the team's current quarterback situation on the brand new Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin radio show.
Jarrett Stidham's really coming on here in year two. He got a, you know, great year last year in terms of, you know, learning and personal and technique development at the position. And Cam's been, you know, a late addition, but, you know, he's brought a lot of energy and obviously playing experience to our room. And for him, it's, you know, catching up on the specifics of the Patriots, you know, system, terminology, and so forth, which, you know, he's worked extremely hard at. And, you know, we really haven't had a lot of competitive opportunities. We really haven't had any. That'll start, you know, I'd say probably in a couple of days here once we, you know, get into padded practices and so forth where we can really go out there and compete. But they've all been great. And as I said, Cam, who I just haven't had any experience working with Cam, but he works extremely hard. He puts a lot into it, as do Jarrett and Brian. So it's a really hard-working, competitive room.
Tim, we all think Cam Newton's going to be the starter, but he has to earn it still. What do you want to see out of Cam as these padded practices ramp up over the next few weeks?
I just want to see that he's healthy. I also want to make a quick note that he's practicing in a hooded sweatshirt in New England, so it is different than in Tampa. But, look, I think when you look at, you know, Cam Newton, it's really about the foot. It's not the shoulder. You know, the shoulder injuries were a 2018 thing. You know, when he came into the 2019 season, the shoulder was good to go. It was the foot injury that was the problem, and that eventually landed him on the IR and then subsequently surgery. That's the key. And the reason that's the key is what makes him special is his ability as a runner. He's got 58 rushing touchdowns from 2011 to 2018. That's more than Marshawn Lynch over that stretch. Just to give you an idea of what type of runner he was and the type of threat that he was in the red zone. And so I just think that for him to come in and have an impact in this bizarre offseason, you know, running the football is one of the ways you kind of, you know, can make up for not having timing down in the passing game and, you know, some of the things that take a little bit more work and precision. So I just want to see that he's healthy, and if he is, I would expect New England to run him and run him off.
Boy, and I agree with Tim. It's fascinating to me when we go to opening day and you think about the Miami Dolphins and longtime Patriot assistant Brian Flores, now the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, having no idea what to expect with this Cam Newton-led offense. Is it going to look like a little bit like Tim Tebow and Josh McDaniels back in around 2010? Is it going to be the play action of Norv Turner and the Carolina Panthers of 2018? Is it going to be the New England Patriot offense that we've watched over the last 20 years? Play action, getting to the backs, getting to the slot receiver, or is it going to be a little bit of all those things? I think this Patriot offense is going to be one of the most fascinating stories, especially early on in the season when opposing defenses will have absolutely no idea what to expect. And Tim deserves a lot of credit because Tim's been talking about Cam Newton to the Patriots going back to March, where other people said, hey, will they draft Jordan Love or who's Tom Brady's heir apparent? You know, Tim's really talked about this for a while, and I think the diversity of this offense will make them really hard to defend once we get to the regular season.
We got Tim making Shefty sweat a little bit on his insider job. Dan, Cam Newton never really has had a bunch of all-stars around him, but is there enough in New England around Cam to be successful if and when he becomes the starter?
I think, you know, you look at the receiver group, and Mike says, is it going to be throwing to the backs, throwing to the slot receiver? The slot receiver, Edelman, is still their best and most reliable guy. They're hoping, I know that N'Keal Harry, first-round pick from last year, takes a jump and gives them a threat there on the outside. But, yeah, I mean, they have pass-catching running backs like crazy. They have running backs that can carry the ball that were high draft picks. I mean, I factor in if Cam Newton is the quarterback that he can run as well as any quarterback ever has. I think New England probably projects as a threat to maybe lead the league in rushing. I know Baltimore's got that on lockdown right now, but I think especially at the beginning, I would expect it to be focused a lot on the run game and throwing it to the back.
Yeah, certainly will be an interesting season coming up for the Patriots again. I think we all believe at some point Cam Newton will take over as the starting quarterback for the Patriots, who have made the playoffs in 11 straight seasons, actually the second longest streak amongst American pro sports team, only trailing the Penguins. And some believe their 14th appearance, this most recent one, maybe wasn't as legitimate as their previous 13, given the NFL's round-robin format to begin the restart.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tua Tagovailoa took another major step forward on Monday when the Dolphins quarterback participated in his first padded practice since suffering that hip injury last November. Here's his head coach, Brian Flores, on how the rookie looked.
We're taking this one day at a time. With Tua, as we are with every player, and hoping that he improves on a daily basis. But you know, like any rookie, he needs the snaps and he needs the reps to improve and get better and give himself a chance. Tua and Fitz and Rosen as well. I think they're those relationships that are building. It's just one example of hopefully what we're getting from the majority of the guys in the locker room.
Dan, I've got a simple question for you that I'm sure the Dolphins have spent a lot of time trying to figure out the answer to. What's the plan for Tua?
Plan for Tua is to put him into a competition for the starting quarterback job, and that's how they want him to view it. They believe he's healthy enough to engage in that competition, and they want to see if he can win the job from Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Josh Rosen, by the way, who Brian Flores just mentioned, I think people forget he's there. As of now, the Dolphins are progressing as though Fitzpatrick is the starter. He's the one throwing to the first team receivers in practice, while Tua and Rosen are throwing to second and third string guys. Obviously, that could change over the coming weeks if Tua shows enough, but he's going to have to show enough in order to get them to make that decision. Right now, they believe Fitzpatrick is a starter and the rookie has to come get it.
All right, well, Tim, in an ideal world, the football doesn't always work ideally. Should the Dolphins push for Tua to start in week one?
I don't think they should push for it, Field. I think in normal circumstances, I think you would push for it. You know, a high draft pick who's healthy, who has OTAs, rookie mini camps, a traditional training camp. I think at that point, you do want to push that guy. I believe the best way to get better playing the quarterback position isn't watching someone else do it. It's actually playing the position. But with this offseason and then his injury situation from a year ago, it's not something I would push. In fact, I would probably treat the first four games of the regular season as his training camp, like a real training camp to kind of, try to see if you can get him, a little bit of live action to see if he, in fact, is ready at some point to be the starter in his rookie season. So this pandemic and change in terms of how everyone's operating in the NFL, has changed my opinion of how you approach his rookie season.
Yeah, and just to put some context on what Tim said, how about this for a comparison? Ryan Fitzpatrick, in his career, including college and pros, has 171 starts. Tua Tagovailoa has 24. So when you think about what that translates into when it comes to opening day, especially when you think about that Fitzpatrick's actually been with Chan Gailey, Miami's offensive coordinator, it's just an unfair sort of comparison to say that Tua could actually be ready and surpass Fitzpatrick early in this year. All that experience, all that reps, with no OTAs, no joint practices, no preseason games, there's just not enough time to get these rookie quarterbacks ready. I'm sure we're going to see Justin Herbert sit. Obviously, we're going to see Jordan Love sit in Green Bay, and with the exception of Joe Burrow. So Tua Tagovailoa very well could be Miami's quarterback for the next 5-10 years. But I agree with Tim. You've got to bring him along slowly because of the very unusual nature of what this offseason's been.
Dan, Tim said a moment ago that the best way to get better at playing quarterback is to play and not watch someone else play. But how does the lack of a preseason change the evaluation process for not just Tua, but really all these young quarterbacks that Mike also just laid out?
There's no question it significantly changes it. I think Tim's point and the way he framed it is very well taken. Normally you would say, oh, he's the top five pick. He's your future. Play him. That's the best. But you're not going to be able to see him under the lights. You're not going to be able to see him against live competition until you get into the season. Yes, he's going to have to play at some point. But whereas in a normal year, you might have a team like the Dolphins eager to find any reason to put their superstar rookie first-round pick on the field, the approach is a little different this year because they're not going to be playing any of those preseason games. So that is part of what factors into it, without a doubt.
All right, well, the Dolphins are certainly working on their quarterback competition, but their defense, also a major work in progress. They need to improve from last year when they ranked last in the NFL in sacks, pressures, and touchdowns allowed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The Cowboys began padded practice this morning, and while that's good news for the team, they also got some unexpected bad news. Defensive tackle Gerald McCoy will have season-ending surgery on a torn quadricep suffered in Monday's practice. Here's our Ed Werder with more.
Well, Field, Gerald McCoy has exemplified durability in his NFL career, playing nearly 7,000 snaps, second most among NFL defensive tackles behind Ndamukong Suh. But McCoy won't play any snaps for the Cowboys this season. In the team's first padded practice this summer, McCoy suffered a torn right quadriceps tendon that will require surgery. Executive Vice President Stephen Jones said a short time ago, it's a season-ending injury. McCoy appeared to be engaged with teammate Antoine Woods during individual drills when he was hurt. McCoy has been starting right tackle and valued for his inside pass rush. Jones said he and personnel director Will McClay have discussed their options and will likely replace McCoy with somebody already on the roster. Tyrone Crawford can play inside and out. Another option, Tristan Hill, the team's most disappointing player as a rookie last season, playing no snaps after week 7. And a final note on that defensive line field, the Cowboys expect defensive end Everson Griffin to participate in his first practice as soon as Tuesday. He's cleared the COVID testing protocols.
Ed's working overtime. He got a text actually from Gerald McCoy. I'll read this right now. I was really looking forward to this amazing opportunity we have in front of us. I will remain the mentor I am to the young guys, and no doubt that Gerald McCoy is an outstanding teammate. Mike, I want to start with you, though, on the impact. What is the impact of the Gerald McCoy injury on this Cowboys defensive front?
Oh, it's really significant. You know, when you think about what happened in the offseason, they lost Malik Collins. This was the guy that they brought in. They thought could solidify that interior defensive part of their line with Don Terry Poe. Edward already mentioned they have a couple of internal candidates to replace McCoy. If you look externally, you know, two names come to mind. One would be Jadeveon Clowney. Now, Clowney's obviously a defensive end. McCoy was a defensive tackle, but there is some versatility with some of their players like Crawford where they can maybe slide him inside. And then the other name is Snacks Harrison, who's out there, very productive interior defensive tackle. So I know they're going to look at Galmore, who is a really productive defensive tackle from Oklahoma. And you always want to start from inside your organization this time of year if you can because of conditioning. But if not, I think Clowney or Harrison make a ton of sense. But this is a fascinating group when you think about Aldon Smith hasn't played in a couple of years. He's trying to come back. Randy Gregory's eligibility is still up in the air. They just signed Everson Griffin. So there's a lot of work to be done on a really important position group for a team that a lot of us think could be a contender because of all the firepower they have on offense.
Mike, I want to press you for a second on that Clowney suggestion, not because of the fit, but because of the finances. He wants a ton of money. Could the Cowboys actually make that work financially?
It would be, they would have to be creative, Field, because they don't have a lot of cap room right now. Obviously, all eyes are on that Dak Prescott situation for next year and what could be, Field, the $38.5 million cap charge if they have to franchise him again. But you could give him a low base. You could do a two-year deal with a lot of incentives, guaranteed money next year. So there's a couple different levers they have from a cap standpoint if they do want to be aggressive. And again, I think the conversation they have to have is, could Clowney come in with an Everson Griffin, with an Aldon Smith, and help get us over the top? And if we think he can, let's get creative and try to get that deal done.
Oh, Graz, thought you were going to get in there?
Yeah, Mike, I talked to a source today, told me that the Cowboys did look into Jadeveon Clowney before they signed Everson Griffin. And Clowney, from what I understand, still looking for more money than teams are willing to pay, or in the case of the Cowboys, they feel like they're able to pay. So that doesn't seem realistic unless the price drops significantly. And then in terms of Snacks Harrison or some of the other D tackles that are out there, you know, the people I've talked to there, McCoy is a pass rusher, interior pass rusher. Those guys are more run stoppers, so they'd have to adjust around him. So I think you're going to see them first try and fix it internally. Ed mentioned Tyrone Crawford as a versatile guy that can move around the line. And then, of course, those two young guys that you and Ed both mentioned that they've drafted high in the last couple of years. They'll hope that they can get improvement and quality performance out of those guys. But obviously a tough situation for the Cowboys there, losing McCoy, who they had a pretty significant role set aside for.
Yeah, certainly one of those players that you had earmarked as playing a big role for the Cowboys this year. Let's stay in the NFC East. As the Eagles had their first padded practice today, the quarterback Carson Wentz threw to new wide receiver Jalen Reagor. Here's Wentz on his first impression.
He has come in into camp, obviously, in great shape. He's the leader of our football team, obviously. He's coaching up the young players, which is great to see. Jalen Reagor has really been impressive out on the football field.
I mean, we got a handful of younger guys, especially at the receiver position, and having Jalen has been a lot of fun just to work with him. You know, he is an explosive athlete. He's really picked up on things really well, and he's always listening, always curious. I'm excited to help him become the player that he dreams of being.
Carson Wentz ranks 9th in passing yards last season, but he also became the first 4,000-yard passer without a 500-yard wide receiver in NFL history. While the Eagles did draft 3 receivers, including Reagor, the team will be counting on their tight ends, running backs in the return of a healthy Alshon Jefferson and DeSean Jackson. Here's Sal Palantonio with more from Eagles camp.
Doug Peterson says he wants to open up the offense, but he's shorthanded at the wide receiver position. Today, what I observed here at the first padded practices of the NovaCare facility for the Eagles, wide receiver J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, he showed up on the injury report, didn't practice. On the physically unable to perform list is Alshon Jeffrey. So the starting wide receivers were 33-year-old DeSean Jackson, rookie Jalen Reagor, and Greg Ward. Remember him, he came off the practice squad and performed well late last year. So the Eagles may look to add some wide receivers here in camp.
All right, more wide receiver talk as the Baltimore Ravens are expected to host wide receiver Dez Bryant for a workout this week. That according to multiple reports first reported by the NFL Network. Here's Ravens head coach John Harbaugh. Actually, he would not comment on the reports when addressing reporters Monday, so there is no sound to play. Brian is 31. He has not played in the NFL since 2017 when he was with the Cowboys. Remember, he did have a brief stint with the New Orleans Saints. Mike, let's talk about this player. Can Dez Bryant, if he were to both work out and sign with the Baltimore Ravens, make an impact for this team?
Oh, absolutely. When you think about this offense, they have two really good tight ends in Boyle and Andrews. They got a couple of really good running backs. I think Dobbins was a steal in the draft. They have an explosive player in Hollywood Brown. They need another element in their passing game on the outside. This makes a lot of sense. A lot of people have rumored Antonio Brown with the Ravens. Him or Dez Bryant, I could see really trying to balance out what could be a very good offense and a very diverse offense to defend.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Mike. I think when you look at how they're constructed, obviously they have the speed of Hollywood Brown, but having a big physical, receiver, a guy that will block, which Dez is always, was always willing to do throughout his career, similar to Miles Boykin, who they have on their roster, I think it's a good idea for the Ravens to look into it. I really do. And, you referenced earlier in the show about, guys coming in, in this bizarre offseason, soft tissue injuries. I think being ready to sign guys, kind of prior to, guys going down, or at least having your information and your background checks kind of done on where they are physically. Remember, Dez is coming off of some pretty significant injuries. And so with that, I think it's smart for the Ravens to at least have Dez Bryant on their radar.
Mike, this may seem like somewhat of a silly question, but we do often overlook the fact that Lamar Jackson still going to be a third-year quarterback. How important is this specific offseason for the reigning MVP?
Oh, Phil, this is a huge year for him, and here's why. The three other defensive coordinators have in the division have just broken down everything Lamar does well and doesn't do well. And here's what he doesn't do well for all the great things that he does. When the ball is in the air for 20 yards or more and it's thrown outside the left hash mark, he only completes his passes at 25%, which is the lowest in the NFL. And I promise you, if I know that, the other three teams know that. If he could prove that he could win left-handed, where they take away his strengths, where they keep him in the pocket, where they overload blitz to his right, make him throw to the left and down the field, and if he's successful doing that, guys, Lamar Jackson will have a great career. But that's what defenses in the NFL do. They make you adjust and they make you play to your weaknesses, and that's why this is such an important year for Lamar Jackson.
There's no question that defenses are going to change the way they defend Lamar Jackson. If you just think about the scheme which Baltimore runs, it's sound. They basically attack, the other team's, edge player, typically their best pass rusher, and instead of blocking them with your offensive tackle or a tackle and a tight end, they're blocking him with a decision. Do I give the ball to the back, or does the quarterback end up keeping it? That is a huge advantage for that Ravens offense. Now, you can try to kind of combat that if you're a defense by playing a different front, by playing your coverages a little bit differently with how you line up in terms of how you're using your leverage with a slot defender. There is no doubt about it that the Ravens are going to see fronts and coverages that look different than other teams get when that opponent is playing them. And so there'll be an adjustment. Now, I think the thing that is kind of the great equalizer in all of this is we saw last year there would be teams that had a perfect play call on. Maybe it was a corner blitz right into the run, and then you would have Lamar Jackson standing there with a secondary player in space, and Lamar would make a miss. I mean, it wouldn't be down in two-hand touch. And so I think that really ends up being kind of the differentiator here is he still just that much physically better in space than so many other players that end up in space with him.
Yeah, you might have a plan pre-snap, Tim, but post-snap, all bets are off against Lamar Jackson. We have a bit of news here, and it actually comes from another AFC North team. It's new on NFL Live. Brown star running back Nick Chubb is being evaluated for a concussion after getting tackled high in practice by linebacker Mack Wilson. He left the practice field with a member of the team's training staff, and again, they are now evaluating Chubb for a concussion. New on NFL Live from our Chiefs reporter Adam Teicher, the Chiefs say they will cap capacity at home games at about 22% of Arrowhead Stadium capacity to begin the season. Of course, the Chiefs open up the season at home against the Texans on Thursday, September 10th. 23 days away, but who's counting? Washington football team quarterback Alex Smith has been cleared for football, capping a remarkable recovery from a leg injury. Smith is in line to be on the field when Washington begins full pad practice work on Tuesday. After suffering that unfortunate injury in week 11 of the 2018 season, Smith underwent 17 surgeries to repair not only a broken tibia and fibula, but also to battle an infection. On Sunday, 614 days after the injury, Alex Smith was activated from the PUP list and cleared to return to practice. Smith just sat down with our Stefania Bell earlier this afternoon for his first comments since being cleared for football activity.
I feel like I've said this a lot before. It continues to kind of get better and better. I mean, I keep feeling like I'm improving even as the weeks go on, the days go on. In the back of my head, wondering when I'm going to hit that wall. But for me, honestly, I feel like even in the last 3 weeks, I've progressed a ton. This is kind of an unprecedented injury. And I think the team really wanted to make sure, obviously, that not only was my bone healed up, but obviously was I in, what kind of shape was I in? What could I handle as far as a workload goes? Because could I handle a practice out there? That's what I wanted, this entire time, to see if I could, put the cleats on, put the helmet on, and go out there and what was left and to kind of push and find my limitations, my new limitations, still in pursuit of that. So still going, still rolling. Like I said, just to really trying to take advantage of every day.
Mike, it's amazing we're even having this conversation, but what would it take for Alex Smith to be Washington's starting quarterback in week one?
Well, Phil, here's what's interesting. It's a football decision now, and let me take you behind the scenes. I've been in the room with doctors for years. When he is cleared medically to play and he passes his physical, this is 100% a football decision by Coach Rivera. Alex Smith has started 190 games in his career going back to college. So, again, as we've talked about for the past hour, with the weird offseason, because of that experience, now that he's healthy, I think he has a very realistic chance to start. And if Coach Rivera sees anything close to what Alex Smith once was, he may give them the best chance early in the season while Dwayne Haskins continues to develop.
Hey, look, Mike is right. When, the doctors clear him, then it comes down to being a football decision. That's exactly how it works. With that being said, being cleared and then being able to perform at a really high level, I think are two very separate things. And so, the last thing I want to do is be the guy that comes in raining on this parade here, because what Alex Smith has done is remarkable. It would have been really easy to walk away. And the fact that he's even to this point, is inspiring to a lot of people, that have ever faced any type of adversity. So, while I appreciate that, when I have seen the stuff that I have seen, he doesn't look healthy to me. He maybe looks healthy enough to be cleared and to do drills, but to play the game the way that he played it in those starts that Mike is referencing, he doesn't look like that to me yet. And it doesn't mean he can't get to that point. I want to bet on him because he's gotten to this point. But that would be my, I think, apprehension on, what the prospects of him are to really contribute and help this football team.
Yeah, so what's happening here in terms of talking to people around this situation, he has made this step he's taken in the last 48 hours is a significant next step. It is not the final step, and frankly, there are quite a number of steps in between this one and the final step. He is going to be eased back in to practice. The coaching staff of the Washington football team wants to see Alex Smith do some things they frankly haven't seen yet. Take a snap, drop back from center, move around in the pocket, react to a pass rush. I know he's not going to see live action, but even in drills, that's going to be stuff they haven't seen from him yet. There's significant concern, obviously, still about his ability to protect himself. And if he doesn't show that, then we're still a ways away from having the conversation about whether he could be the starter at all, let alone 4 weeks from now. So very exciting news without a doubt. But I think just talking to people around this situation, it's important to remember that he's still got a ways to go before we're talking about him playing in an NFL game again.
Alex Smith may very well have goals of becoming the Washington football team starting quarterback again, but as far as I'm concerned, mission accomplished just making it this far in his recovery, given how gruesome that injury was at the time in just November of 2018. The Washington football team has also hired Jason Wright as team president, making him the first black team president in NFL history and only the fourth former player to ascend to that role. Here is Jason Wright on First Take earlier today discussing the significance.
We didn't talk about race. We didn't talk about, you know, civil rights. We didn't even really talk about my research on racial equity and stuff that I've done previously. We talked about business. We talked about doing the role. We talked about culture. We talked about, you know, setting things right where they need to be set right in the organization. We talked about charting a new course, having a new public narrative about the club. You know, we didn't talk about, like, hey, man, it's really good that you're black. That's going to help me. That didn't come up. And so, you know, insofar as I see my mandate for the role based on those conversations, it's about business. And the fact that I'm black, I will be unapologetically black throughout my tenure in this role. So it'll show up, but it's not the lead here.
For more perspective on this hiring, here is Jason Reed, the senior writer for The Undefeated, who has deep D.C. roots.
Well, the hiring of Jason Wright as the first black team president in league history is highly significant. Obviously, you're talking about someone who's a trailblazer, someone who has taken this position at a time when Washington's NFL franchise is going through a lot of turmoil off the field. There were the allegations of sexual harassment made by many former female employees. The league is investigating the franchise for possibly violating the Rooney Rule. The team is undergoing a renaming process. And owner Daniel Snyder is being pressured to sell the team by several minority investors, reportedly. So there's a lot going on at this time. And Jason Wright comes to the organization, former NFL player, someone who is widely respected in the business world. And he comes in and he's got a lot on his plate. But you talk to people throughout the league and what they tell you is he is well positioned to succeed here because of his credentials, because of his intelligence, because of what he brings to the table as someone who understands how the NFL works. So really, not only an historic hire, but the right hire, it definitely seems like.
All right, time for one last spin around all the training camp news today, and we start with Ed Werner and Big D.
Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones failed in his 18-month effort to sign franchise tag quarterback Dak Prescott. The Cowboys quarterback, though, has huge incentive this season, and Jones said he doesn't believe the risk of playing without long-term security will negatively affect Prescott. Jones said he's never seen anything shake Prescott, said there's no question when watching practice who's leading the team here, and said the player's sole focus is on winning a Super Bowl for the Cowboys. Running back Ezekiel Elliott said his advice to Prescott, just keep grinding, head down, do what you've been doing, it's going to work itself out.
We got our first look at the 2020 Saints, and nothing stood out more than this fascinating QB trio. Drew Brees, Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill. In one drill, Brees and Winston even lined up side by side, dropped back and threw in lockstep, which was cool to see. Now, Winston did have one pass intercepted in team drills when it bounced off the hands of a rookie receiver, but you couldn't miss that big arm, and both Brees and Sean Payton have raved about him so far. I also loved when Brees inadvertently referred to his backups as Tamus. I said it was a slip of the tongue, but may have just come up with a great t-shirt idea.
On the first pass play of the Bucs' first padded practice, Tom Brady hit Scotty Miller deep for a touchdown, 50-plus air yards. Bruce Arians said Brady's been throwing 60-yard dimes in practice, but he was also picked off by Pernell Motley on a pass intended for Mike Evans. So I asked Bruce Arians to summarize today's performance, and he said he is still right where he needs to be.
Bill Belichick says Cam Newton is still catching up on the specifics of the Patriots system. And one example from practice on this field right behind me reflected that. Newton was barking out signals to his teammates, and he had a moment of indecisiveness where he turned around, wondering if he was doing the right thing. Then he threw an incomplete pass. Newton took one knee after that, and he looked frustrated. So one big question after Monday's practice, how fast can Cam catch up?
Let the Tua mania begin. A few hours ago, I watched Tua Tagovailoa in his first padded football action since that scary November hip injury, and quite simply, he looked healthy. Tua was eased into action, throwing just two passes in 11-on-11 drills, but his mobility was fluid and impressive. Josh Rosen had the throw of the day, a deep sideline go to Jakeem Grant, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, he had two deep dimes to Devontae Parker and Preston Williams, a bit magical. So the quarterback competition heats up with a healthy Tua, who is soon to get more on his plate.
Well, no such quarterback competition in Cincinnati this season, as Joe Burrow will be the starter. He also speaks with the media. That's right, on Tuesday afternoon. We will carry it live. I'll have coverage of it on NFL Live.